Om Shanti. Such beautiful exercise, focusing on ourselves as souls. See how it brought us to such joy and excitement. So now we are glad to welcome Sister Jayanti. And I guess so many of you know Sister Jayanti. Sister Jayanti is the director of the BK Brahmakumaris International Coordinating Office in London, and the Global Cooperation House, the Global Retreat Center in Oxford, and she is also the director of the BK Centers. So you can hear me now? Great. So I'm welcoming Sister Jayanti. Today we are very glad to have her. So many of you maybe know her or met her earlier. Sister Jayanti is the director of the BK International Coordinating Office in London. She is also the coordinator of the Global Cooperation House and the Global Retreat Center in Oxford, and the director of the Brahmakumaris Centers in more than 31 countries in Europe and in the Middle East. She is also the representative of the NGO, the non-governmental organization in the United Nations. And through that, she has so many participation in a lot of projects related to climate change, women, youth, and so many other major international projects. So this is the administrative part. Now, on a spiritual part, she has such vast and deep spiritual journey. She started her journey at the age of 19. And I would like to stop in two major milestones in her journey, taking quotes from her own words. So at the age of 19, Sister Jayanti came from UK, where she used to live with her family, to India, to visit India. And there, one of the neighbors or the friends advised them, she and her mother, to go to a satsang. Satsang means spiritual gathering. She was 19 years old, so almost a teenager. And she wrote about this experience. She said, "I was quite resistant to spirituality, and thus I leaned not to go to the satsang. But as I got there, there was this divine energy, a state of real peace, and an unconditional motherly love around this woman," so the woman who was the teacher, the BK teacher, they call her Mama, "who greeted us. I cannot describe how spiritually attractive she was to me at that time. I sat down to listen to her murli," and murli means the playing of the flute, so she was speaking something like music, "and felt deep connection to my own self." So this was the start, from resisting spirituality to getting attracted in a second. And then, years after that, Sister Jayanti said, "Meditation enables me to feed myself, the soul, with a spiritual knowledge that gives me the experience of peace, purity, wisdom, love, and lasting happiness. It gradually restores in me the confidence and dignity to live in the light of my original nature and awakens hope in the self." So you can see how much she represents the balance between the inner work on a spiritual path and in the same time being able to work on the external world with the United Nations, with so many Brahmakumaris centers. So that kind of balance is nicely represented through Sister Jayanti. And she's going to talk about that, how to create balance in my life. Please, if you have any questions, be sure to write it on a piece of paper. Whenever the question comes to you, just write it. There will be sisters on both sides or in the front. Just raise your hand, hand over your question. So at the end of the session, we'll take the written questions only. Thank you very much. Thank you, Sister.
Thank you, Salva. And Om Shanti to everyone. It's lovely to be here with all of you. And I'm sure you've also felt a lot of peace and love here while you've been here already 2-3 days? Good. Let's begin with just a moment of silence. Om Shanti. Balance in life is something that many people are striving for nowadays. Who feels that they manage it? Put up your hands if you manage balance. 1, 2, 3. Okay, so it's the usual situation. I think most of us find it challenging. And there's a very simple formula that I was taught many years ago that at least puts things into perspective. And then applying it in practice might take a little bit longer. But certainly once the image is clear, then things begin to work out in a very positive direction. And so normally we would say that the most important thing is our work. How many would say that? And the others? Would you say family is the most important? Who thinks family is the most important? More important than work, even though it's work that's going to give you the money to look after your family. Yes? Still? Good, I'm glad. Because we're moving in the right direction. From the perspective of spirituality, we would say the most important aspect is the inner being. And I think that many of you understand this, and this is why you're here now. And so giving time and attention and focus to the self, but not the self externally, physically, but the self, the inner being, the soul. If I give attention to that, it sounds very selfish saying giving attention to myself is the most important thing. And of course it is if I'm just thinking about this me and my clothes and my education and my food and my comfort and everything that's related to the external form. But if I'm thinking about the inner being, the soul, and I'm giving focused attention to that, then actually everything begins to fall into place very beautifully. And I'll explain in a little bit more detail in a minute. But the second thing would be relationships. And so that includes family, but it also includes my social life. It also includes my work life in terms of not the output, but my relationship with my colleagues, my superiors, my juniors, whichever level it is I'm working at. But looking after the soul, and then all relationships work out much, much better. And then the last thing is my work. And by work, I don't just mean work in an outside place, but I mean also work at home. Because home life is also a lot of things to manage, a lot of things to sort out. Children's education, traveling, all of these things. But all of those are part of the work that different people have to do at different times. But the most important of everything is not the work and the output of the work, but rather it is the inner being, the soul. Why? Because if I make sure that I give myself time for spiritual study and meditation, then I'm filling myself with the spiritual power that I need to manage everything else. And sometimes when we say, I have to give attention to my family. I haven't looked after them properly. Well, it's not a question of just time, but it's also the question of quality. Maybe I'm spending an evening at home, but we're all sitting watching the box, we're watching the television. Then I haven't given time to my family. I've given time to the television. And I don't give myself the time to engage with them in a meaningful way. And so, whether it's relationships with family, or whether it's relationships at work, I need to have my inner capacity being extended all the time, becoming more and more full, so that I can cope with all the demands of relationships. And we'll come back to that again in a minute. But also then it means that where relationships are solid, not fluctuating, but stable, then I'm going to be able to manage my life in terms of all the work that I carry responsibility for. Whether it's taking care of my home, taking care of my office, taking care of my factory, my industry, whatever it may be. But putting these things in order in this way means that I'm more likely to be not just balanced, but also successful on all three levels. And being successful on all three levels means that I'm able to do what I need to do in the way that is needed at the right time, but also to the satisfaction of not just myself, but others around me. So what's happening when I give time to myself? I'm recharging my inner battery through meditation. And here you're making time for quite a bit of meditation, I'm sure. But when you get back home, again, I would recommend that you keep your morning time. And I won't mention what time we get up, but the earlier you can get up, the better it is, because the mind is fresh and clear and you don't yet have to deal with all the things of the world out there. The mind is free. And so make sure, it's not selfishness to do that, but make sure you give time to your own inner spiritual development, not just once a week, not twice a week, every day. But not just every day. Maybe you've been hearing traffic control here. So maybe at times through the day also. Why? Because as soon as I start engaging with others, whether it's home or work, wherever, I'm giving. Or at least I should be. And that's where things sometimes go up and down. If I'm not full, then I'm going to, in a very simple way, you can see that I'm needy. I need something from others. And I'm waiting for others to give something to me. And when they don't, I get disappointed. And when I'm disappointed, I get frustrated and maybe angry. And so even the little bit of goodness that there was there in the relationship before, because of my discontent, dissatisfaction, it means that I get angry and it's not a very healthy development in my relationship. I'm going to maybe have to work very, very hard to heal the wounds that I've inflicted, maybe because of anger or ego. And so important that I start the day with time for myself, especially for silence, not empty silence, but a pure, powerful, positive, peaceful silence in which you've taken the opportunity of recharging your own inner battery, not only with these qualities that I've mentioned, the peace, the love, and the joy that you need to have within, but you're also developing your own inner powers. a simple thing. I know that when there hasn't been attention given to the self and everybody's busy, lots of things to do, too many things to do probably. And so the situation is then that there's a lot happening, you have a lot on your plate, but you haven't had a chance to recharge. So the next thing is going to be irritability and your irritation with things that are quite simple and normal means that you get irritated, you react, the other person reacts more, and then it goes back and forth and back and forth, action, reaction, action, reaction. And something that was relatively simple, minor, could have been resolved just with a smile, a kind word, or let's sit down and talk about this, and sorting it out in that way, very gently. But of course, instead of that, somebody said something and I reacted, and so it blew up into a big mess. You've had that experience? So that's one very simple thing, irritation that gets in. The other thing that's also very deeply connected with this, when I'm too busy, too much on my plate, and not enough capacity to deal with it all, then my decision making gets impacted. And things are already challenging, and I make the wrong decision, then instead of just a challenge, it becomes a crisis. And now it's not just me, it's probably many others that are involved that will now have to help me sort this thing out. And so you can see how our lack of spiritual capacity at this moment is really intensifying all the challenges that are already facing us. I mean, nature is not cooperating with human beings anymore because of all the things we've done to nature. We've disrespected nature, we've exploited nature, we've aggressed nature. What more? We've killed so many species. Literally, there are so many species extinct now because of our behavior. So that's one problem. The economy, that keeps going up and down. Political situation everywhere. And suddenly something happens and totally unexpected. So all these things are carrying on already. And if I don't have that inner power and inner peace, then I'm not going to manage very well. All these things are already very negative and are pushing me down. And maybe I'm already confused and upset by it all. And then I don't understand what's going on in my own mind. And so I'm reacting. And definitely my decision-making capacity is impaired. And I won't be able to understand what I need to do, how to do it, when to do it. It just won't happen. So I need to, first of all, before I can tackle all these other problems out there, I need to sort things out in here so that at least my responses to people and situations is one of calm, is one of logic and reason instead of emotional outburst and reaction. And so people say I'm too busy to learn to meditate, but in fact it is for busy people. Meditation will help them the most. And I know that all of you have completed the course, so you've got a good amount of information about all the ideas of the Brahma Kumaris, that you needed the time to feel it and be it. And so you accepted our invitation to come here. So thank you for that. I know things in your region are fluctuating all the time, very difficult times. But you still had the courage to tell your family, I'll see you in a week. I'm going away. I'm going on a retreat. And so you've made that choice to give yourself the time for silence and peace now, but you won't get a whole week when you get back home, probably not. But you can create an hour for yourself, especially in the morning. And maybe, probably, you'll have to give up an hour of sleep. Because to try and fit these things in any other way is not so easy. But that 1 hour is investment for you that's going to bring you a reward the whole day long. Because that inner love, the power, the peace that you've taken from the source, from the divine, isn't going to be helping you with everything else. And so that inner state in which I'm able to maintain peace, I'm able to maintain detachment. Detachment isn't rejection. Detachment is simply staying in the awareness of my own identity. And one of the reasons why there's so much misunderstanding today is because, starting with the self, before I came to Raj Yoga, I really did not know 1/10 of myself. I'm talking about 1/10 because with an iceberg, they say what you see above the surface is 1/10, and the rest is hidden deep below the surface. 9/10 is hidden. And so, can I take time for myself each day to understand myself, know what's going on, but also then being able to connect with the divine, so that then I'm able to take all that is within that being and fill myself with that. You've had very clear introductions to the soul and the Supreme Soul. Some of you have been coming to the centers, not just for the course, but for Murali, the daily lessons we get. So the first step is time for silence, to connect with the Supreme Powerhouse, the Almighty Authority. So I have the spiritual power within myself that I can then use through the whole day. And the second aspect is making time for spiritual study. How many of you have heard some Muralis already? Good few. The Murali is the source of our spiritual knowledge. And these are the versions that were spoken by the Supreme, Shiv Baba, through the instrument of Brahma Baba. And those Muralis, between the ones that were spoken between 1965 and 1969, are the ones that were spoken through Brahma Baba. And they contain the full detail of our teachings. Soul and God and karma and meditation, virtues, powers, it covers everything. And then there are other Muralis that came later on, and they focus more on practical life and the application of teachings in our life. But the most important aspect is the teachings that we get that are very, very different and very, very new, in terms of soul and God and karma and so on. And so, those who haven't taken a course, very much I would suggest that you, even when you go back, you take the course, even though you've been here. It's a little bit of a different approach, but you would benefit enormously from the very specific teachings related to the study. So, whatever it is, but every morning, let there be time to feed my mind some nourishing information. Because through the day, A, I'm listening to everything that's going on, and it might be uplifting, but usually it isn't. Think about the conversations that you had before you came here. The quality of your conversations has changed also, I'm sure. But think back to before you arrived here. When was the last time that you had a deep, honest exchange, either with your partner or somebody at work, or even a dialogue with yourself that was meaningful? Can you remember the last time that happened? Probably not, because we haven't made it a part of our life. So to start the day with silence and then spiritual study, and then that spiritual study becomes the basis for what I'm doing in my life through the day. What I'm doing is whatever my profession is, even if it means being someone who's caring for another, someone who's minding the house, whatever it is. But whatever my job is, I'm putting it in a very broad frame, what is my behavior? What is it that guides me through my life? What are the principles and values that I hold, which are absolutely my compass that will carry me through today and the next and the next and the next? So I need that time for myself to put my compass straight, so that then I know what I'm doing through the day. And so morning time for yourself to feed and nourish the soul and to give it the water of God's love, to be able to support yourself in that way, makes you free. You are not dependent on what others give to you or don't give to you. You're not disturbed by what they say. You listen peacefully, you evaluate, and you take what is useful. But you're not influenced, because influence can go either way. It can be positive or it can be negative. And if I'm open to influence one moment, it might be positive, but the next moment it might turn negative. But if I have my compass clear, then I'll be able to stay detached and not be influenced, but take the information that's useful. And that's valuable, of course. So looking after I, the soul, this tiny point of light, is the most important thing in terms of balance. If I've looked after myself well, what's the quality of relationships? There's one very basic difference. Yes, there's more humility, there's greater gentleness, there's greater support for the self, power for the self. But in one word, you change from being a taker into being a giver. And that changes the formula of interaction in any relationship. I come to you, and it's not overt, but inside, deeply, there's something I need from you. I'm not talking about money or a job or anything like that, but I'm needing your appreciation. I'm needing your gratitude. I'm needing something in some form or another from you that's going to help me and support me. Maybe I just need you to validate who I am. But that neediness means that I'm coming with my hand open to take. But the other also is exactly in the same position. They also are needy, unless you're very lucky and you're with people who are on a spiritual track, and so they've really managed to fulfill their needs in a spiritual way. But otherwise, most of the time, the people you're surrounded by, they're needy also. And so I need, and the other one needs, and the string is being pulled in both directions, and neither of us is able to satisfy the other. Well, if the string gets pulled too strongly, it breaks. And that's what's happening in relationships all the time, where it's parents and children. How strained or how beautiful is the relationship? Is there a giving on both sides, or even on one side, unconditional giving? Then the relationship is going to get sweeter and stronger. Workplace, again, the same. Give and take, and there's cooperation, and things will happen very beautifully. And if I'm not able to do that, then I want you to be constantly obeying me, obeying my commands or my orders, and you're not in the mood to listen to that. Well, at some point, again, there's going to be not just tension, but an end. But especially with partners, the people I love the most, I live with the most, I work with the most, it's in the most intimate relationships that this whole subject of give and take takes a lot of prominence. And so the time I give to myself each morning means I'm more patient, I'm more calm, I'm ready to listen, I'm ready to be flexible and adjust. And that goes a long, long way in making sure that the relationship stays alive. Most of us have forgotten about patience. And another word that, how many of you met Daddy Janki? Oh, it's more than I expected. Okay, so you know that from Daddy Janki's classes, she focused a lot on patience and tolerance and things like this. It's true, we get impatient very quickly. We don't have the patience to listen. We don't have the patience to teach. You know, you'll say to somebody, oh, I'd rather do it myself because I can just get on with it. No, a little bit of patience, and it's an investment. Teach somebody something and it'll turn out to your advantage because they'll be helping you. And if you don't have the time and the patience, then fine, get on with it, and it's more and more and more pressure on one. So patience is definitely a virtue that's underrated in today's world. Patience means I'm not reactive. Reactivity means that I explode in a little way or a big way, again and again. And that's draining me of my energy even more. And so even the little bit of energy I had, I get impatient and I explode, and even that energy is lost. And so learning about just waiting for a moment, take a pause and reflect. Should I not? Should I say this? It's better not to say it. It can be said another time. Or it's not useful at all. I don't need to say it at all. Rather than just exploding. And so, just taking that moment to be quiet, just for a split second, something's happened. I just go inside, connect with the soul, and peace and love. My response is going to be totally, totally different. And maybe it's going to save, it's going to salvage that relationship. And maybe if a relationship needs healing, that moment of connecting with myself and then coming into connection is going to be healing for others also. So, second is relationships. And it takes time. If you ignore people, you just rush on. Well, you've saved yourself a minute, but maybe you'll need an hour to repair the damage. Why did you ignore me? How come you didn't listen to me? And so really, just that moment in which I make a decision about right, wrong, what should I do? It's going to be useful. And if I've created stable, positive relationships around myself, I'm never alone when it comes to doing any task. There'll always be support, there'll always be cooperation. Nowadays, we talk a lot about teamwork. And within a team, maybe the most important thing is just to be able to appreciate each other and be able to have that respect and regard. And then the generation of energy is such that the task happens very quickly. But if we haven't invested in that team building process of relationships, and I know people talk about team building in the world out there, but from a spiritual perspective, it means just simply being stable in my own state of self-respect and valuing and giving respect to others. And so if it happens to be a team of three or a team of 30, it doesn't matter. But this core where I respect myself and I'm able to give respect to others, because you've heard this mantra many times, I'm sure, everything begins inside. Have you heard this before? I'm sure you have. Whatever is going inside is what's going to be reflected outside. And so if I value myself and I have self-respect, I'm going to value others. But valuing myself starts with spirituality. Otherwise it's ego, where I think, well, I'm staying in my own state of self-esteem. But if it's not based on spiritual understanding, it's more likely to be ego rather than really self-respect. And we'll be taking up that subject later on this evening, of course, so I won't go into more detail. But when there's dignity and respect within a team, it's not just cooperation, but it's collaboration in which everybody's skills come together to create something that's special. Cooperation, and we all bring our own talents and we work together. But collaboration, where there's deep trust in each other. And so we're working together to create something that's completely different. Not just your skill and my skill, but there's a different energy that's generated and something very beautiful and new comes up. And so work happens much more successfully if I've given time to myself and to relationships. And work is important, whether it's work at home or work in another place, because that's the purpose of human life in a sense. Whatever it is we have, to be able to share that with the world in some form or another. And it might be voluntary work. It might be work in terms of a community. Whatever it is, so it applies to those of us who live in centers also. There's an output that's needed to happen. And when we put in the right things in place in the right way, then our work unfolds very beautifully. And work that would normally take 4 hours can be accomplished in half that time, where there's a team that's working together in cooperation. and maybe not even half the time, maybe even a quarter of the time. There was a person who was he was a director of the meteorological offices in India, and so it was quite a demanding job. And he might have been maybe in his late 40s or 50s when he came across the Brahma Kumaris, and he instantly started following all the disciplines and practicing. And I met him after he'd been following all this for quite a while, and he said to me, "I only need to spend a couple of hours in my office now and I'm able to manage to do my work. Earlier, I used to spend not just 8 hours a day in my office, but sometimes even beyond that. I had to finish whatever it is that was needed. I couldn't just walk out. And yet today, I need to spend just a couple of hours. I don't need to spend any more time. And everything happens beautifully. Nothing gets neglected. So it's not that I'm ignoring things. Everything is happening. It's just that my mind is clearer, so I grasp things more quickly, and I'm able to come to a resolution more efficiently. And of course, I have the support and cooperation of everyone." There was one person, another person, who I think he's now reduced his workload because he's now over 75. But until a few years ago, he was actually running 52 companies. 52 companies, big ones, not little ones. And he said that when I used to walk into my office, people used to be scared of me. And I thought that that was fine. It was okay. They should be scared of me because I'm the boss. And today, I walk into the office and everybody will greet me so warmly and be happy that I'm back. Otherwise, they used to be happy when I was away, and now they're happy when I'm back. And so the quality of interaction has changed completely, because he acknowledges everyone from the receptionist right the way through to his secretary and whoever. But also, he has time to have a word or two with everybody he meets along the way. People look at the spiritual work that's happening here and they wonder how all of that is happening, because a lot goes on. Downstairs in our campus, at the moment we have about 10,000 people, but that's a small number. About 12 times a year we have 25,000 people, and everything just manages. 3 meals a day, unlimited times, tea and coffee, and well, you can just imagine the size of everything and the numbers that are involved in everything. And it all happens because everybody's working together with love, with respect for each other. Dadi Janki, in London, she used to live on the 4th floor, and there was a lift right down to the bottom to the garage where she could just get into the car and go off to do whatever was needed. But she didn't do that. She would insist on coming down by the stairs and then going through the dining room and coming down to reception, and she would want to meet everybody who was there along the way, and a smile, and she carried a little silver box with almonds, and she loved giving almonds. Everybody got almonds along the way. So sometimes it was a big box, sometimes and so, but it used to take at least half an hour longer than was needed. But she would allocate that time to make human contact with everyone and just be able to give each one, you pause for a few moments and you're not just giving almonds, but you're actually connecting soul to soul. You know about eyes open meditation. So we have what we call drishti, the vision of soul consciousness, in which I'm not just aware of I the soul and you the soul, but in between us is the divine. And so I'm connecting with the divine, you're doing the same, and both of us connect with that being. And if I'm with people who don't know about these things, you can just still give drishti yourself, whether they know what you're doing or not, but they'll feel calmer in your presence. They will want you to be around them because they'll begin to feel that the vibration is different when you're there. And if you're absent, they'll miss that presence that you bring into the gathering. And all this happens very naturally, very automatically. You don't have to think about it too much, but it happens. Why? Because you started the day well. You started the day with the recharging of the battery, feeding your mind very nourishing things, and then through the day, you sustained it. You didn't just say, okay, I'm done. But through the day, your sustenance was the traffic control. Every hour, on the hour, just for a few moments, to be able to just go inside and again check, where am I? Am I aware of the soul? Am I connected with one? So, yourself, the priority, then the relationships, and the exchange that you have with everyone is then simply of love and joy. That's it. There's nothing else that's going to create bondage. The bondages we've created with others is because of the ego, the anger, the greed, and so on. But I come to soul consciousness, I see the other as a soul, and now I'm not going to create any more bondage between us. But rather, we're just able to enjoy each other's company with love and joy and truth. So a very, very different way of creating balance in my life. But just simply learning to go deeper inside and connecting with myself so that I can understand how to refill myself with the things that I personally need the most. So let me stop here and see if you've got questions. Maybe some of you have written questions.
Thank you very much, Sister Gianti. So until we get the questions,
she's got some.
We'll have like fast summary. I got few points. That my inner peace, inner power is my tool to maintain my balance and the methods to do that. Please enjoy the time writing your question. So once we get this point, we can start with the questions. So the few points suggested was, thank you, was creating time in the morning to cultivate me time, have silence, have spiritual knowledge, and create a strong foundation for the whole day. Thank you. So knowing the self and connecting with the ultimate source of all powers. And the second method was being clear about my campus. What's my campus? My values, my principles. So just be clear about that. And the third method is, thank you, transformation from a taker to a giver and understanding that the other person is stuck in this misunderstanding. Everybody is a taker. So how can I transform that in myself? And of course, we are not talking about physical things. We are talking about respect, regard, love, these things that we are searching or asking others to give us. And remembering that everything begins inside. And practicing drishti as a reminder, who am I, who the other person is, and traffic control. So I'm sure you have so many others in your notes. Simple few things. So This is the first question, how to balance with people who disappoint you. How to balance with people who disappoint you. How to balance. How to behave. How to behave with people.
Well, my disappointment comes because of my expectations. And so maybe I need to do something about that first to myself. I know somebody. Well, what is it that they would like to do? What is it that they would like to be? Rather than my imposition of what I want from them, well, can I understand where they're at? And when I understand what's happening for them, then my expectations won't be in the same way. And so I'll understand their limitation, I'll understand their boundaries, and I won't react when they do things because I understand. And so I'm not disappointed because my disappointments came from artificial expectations, not real. You know, sometimes I expect things that are way, way, way up here, much more than the capacity of the individual. And maybe there is a capacity, but maybe I don't have a warm relationship with them. So again, I should really not be expecting anything from them. And so I think that let me manage my expectations more realistically, then I won't be disappointed.
Thank you. We have two questions connected to this question. The first one is, do we have to disconnect with those toxic relations, the relations that cause us a lot of heaviness and tiredness? And the other one is also connected to it, maybe how to detach, how to be detached, and what does it mean, especially with your family whom you love? How can you detach from those people?
I'm going to treat them separately. I see them as, if I look at it separately, it's easier. So how to deal with toxic relationships and then detachment and that whole subject. So the first step, where there's a relationship that leaves me heavy or uncomfortable, or even actually there's been violence, whether it's emotional abuse or physical abuse. So if these are the sort of things that are happening, I have to ask myself, is it necessary for me to continue in this relationship? And maybe it's a question of a job, and all of this applies to my boss, and it's toxic, and it's not right, it's not nice. But can I look for an alternative job? And if I can, let me do that. Why should I expose myself to a situation that's not something I'm comfortable with on whatever level? But if I can't find another job, even though I've tried, and maybe I don't have sufficient qualifications, or I haven't looked hard enough, whichever it is, then I'm going to have to learn to manage myself, even though it's uncomfortable. And the way to manage myself is to protect myself with God's light and love. I remember being in a situation where the other person was a very angry person, and she was a volunteer, and you don't hire a volunteer, so you can't fire a volunteer. And so I was a little bit stuck with that. And on one level, she had really beautiful qualities, but her anger was quite incredible also. And in Madhuban, I learned, if I put a canopy above myself, God's canopy of light, and allow that light to surround me. And especially when I know that today I'm going to be meeting that individual, it can happen unexpectedly, of course, also. But where you know that you're interacting with somebody all the time and you can't just throw them out or leave yourself, do this. create a canopy of light around yourself. And the first thing that will happen is that you'll stop feeling bad in that situation. Because whatever they're doing, you're surrounding yourself with that protection. And so it's not touching you. And the next step would be to extend that canopy to them also, so that they're able to change in some way. But that's not the first step. Very often you think, I wish this person would change. Can't do that. But let me create that canopy for myself so I'm protected, but I can extend that canopy to the other also so that they take benefit too. And the other thing is that if it is possible for me to get a new job, to leave my partner, I need a lot of courage. I need to be very clear about what my next steps are going to be, because I don't want to find myself in a situation where, I've lost a job and I don't have the possibility of finding another one quickly, or I've left my partner and I'm not managing on whatever level it is, whether it's my emotions or memories or whether it's finance. So I need to just be very clear about, do I want to stay or do I want to leave? And if I leave, what are my options? How can I manage? Then the other subject about detachment. We always seem to use this word detachment in terms of human relationships. But Baba tells us something else. Baba tells us that the first step of detachment is I detaching myself from this. Because so far, both have been together for a very long time, if not this body, other bodies. But now, I understand that I have a separate identity to the identity of this. And in that awareness of the soul, my first step of detachment has to be from my own skin. Can I detach from this body and this label of who I am? And the more I practice this, the easier it becomes to be free from any dependencies. And attachment and dependency absolutely go together. And so when I've let go of dependencies because I'm getting all I need from one, then I don't need to hang on to anyone else. But human nature, and we keep coming back to this identity rather than this identity. And so while you're here, homework. Every hour, on the hour, just check and write a percentage for yourself. It's not to show anyone. It's really just for you. And what you're doing is writing after every hour to what extent you were soul conscious. Maybe it was 1%. Well, write it down. Maybe it was 10%. Maybe it was more. Maybe it was more. Maybe it was more. But whatever it is, you write it down. And it would be a very strong reminder if it's zero for the next hour. And so if I keep practicing soul consciousness in this way and keep connecting with the one above, I'll find that my behavior with those around me has shifted. Not just in terms of being the giver and not the taker, but also just in terms of the way I'm responding to situations with this one, this one, this one. And probably I'll find that I'm becoming more and more of a mediator, where they can't manage things between them, that I can be there and be the bridge and help. And so because of the changes that have happened in my life through meditation, I'm free. And so I'm not dependent on anyone, anything. And so there's no attachment. I'm still very much with my family because I have a responsibility there. But what I'm doing there is seeing everything with a different light in the consciousness of being a trustee. Trustee means that I don't own my children. They're in trust. God created them, not me. But I have been given the responsibility to make them mature until they're ready to fly on their own. And so I'm loving, but I'm also detached. I'm loving because they need that love. If they don't get that love, then they'll look for it in other directions. And so I'm giving them love, but I'm very aware that God is the one who's actually giving. And it's God who's the parent, my parent, and their parent also. And so the loving and detachment comes through the first practice, the practice of soul consciousness and experiencing that detachment from the body.
Thank you very much. We have another question about practicing meditation. They say in the beginning it was easy to connect with the self and with God. And as they progress, it's becoming more difficult. And now it is extremely difficult. So what's wrong and how they can overcome this? The more they practice, the more difficult it becomes for them to connect with the self and with God. So why it's happening like that and how they can overcome this?
When we first come to spirituality, everything is very knowledge, very unique. The knowledge is unique. And so we're excited about it and we're very focused and interested in it. It's grabbed our attention. And so the meditation is powerful. But as we go along, we get used to these ideas and it's not novel anymore. And so it's very easy for the mind to get a little bit bored and say, oh, you know, I've done this before, oh, I've done this. So then we don't give it that enthusiasm and that love and commitment. And so what I can do about that is study the Muralis, so I'm taking something fresh, something new from the Muralis every single day. And I'm focusing on that when I'm sitting in yoga. And that is then the experience that I will have. Guarantee, if I've been attentive to following a spiritual lifestyle and I'm studying the Murali, the lessons, I take something from that every day and that's going to help in my meditation because I'll take that one point and keep it in my awareness to experiment with, to feel it. Whoever's asked the question, does that answer you? Well, I hope it has.
جنتي تسأل اللي طرح هاي السؤال كل مرة أحاول الاتصال بالله والدخول لذاتي صارت الأمور أصعب. تسأل هل وصلتك الإجابة اللي تنتظرها؟ Okay, you get it? Okay, this question says, I'm suffering of being absent-minded, especially during meditation. How can I deal with this?
It's very easy to get absent-minded. You're sitting comfortably, everything is fine, and so your mind drifts off. And you're not thinking about anything in particular. I think that's the state that's been described in this way. So when I sit to meditate, I'm communicating. When I'm communicating with you, I don't just let my mind drift off somewhere. You'll say, hey, what's going on? Are you asleep? But I'm engaged in it. I want you to understand what I'm sharing, and I want to understand what you want to say to me. And so there's a mutual flow of energy. And in meditation, we sometimes think, well, I'm a peaceful soul, I'm a quiet soul, and next thing is the mind has gone drifting off somewhere, I don't even know where, and many minutes later I say, oh my goodness, what have I done, what have I been? So, the main thing, take up a subject that is interesting for you, and use that as the starting point for your meditation. You're reflecting on that one aspect. And if I'm doing that, I'm keeping my mind engaged with it. Absent-mindedness in meditation is not healthy. And it's because if I'm detaching from the body, I'm soul conscious, but I'm not yet focused on the divine, I'm opening myself up to all the different influences around me. And so I mustn't let that happen, because the influences around me at this present time are 90% negative and 10% positive. So I don't know what I'm going to be catching. So the important thing is to keep the mind awake and alert in meditation. Who am I? What are my original qualities? Can I experiment and see what it feels like when the soul leaves the body and there's nothing here? What does it feel like? I want to know. And if I want to know, Baba will surely tell me the answer also. But also, just to keep the mind engaged, not to let the mind drift off here and there.
I have here three questions about relation with people, so I will say them together. The first one is how to deal with people who always repeat the same sad story. They always repeat the same sad story. How can I deal with them?
And be very quiet, give them drishti, and then just say to them, you know, you've shared this story with me 5 times, 10 times, and it's not useful for you. Because usually it's sad stories that they have to relate, right? If it's a happy story, fine, I don't mind hearing it. Tell them. If you've got a happy story to share with me, I'll be happy to listen. But if it's going to be the same sad story, it makes you upset, it makes me upset, and so what's the point? Really just talk to them about it and help them understand that it's underlining the sorrow that they're carrying. Every time I repeat something, it's underlining something in the soul. And if I repeat things of joy, of God, of love, great. But if it's going to be things that are really complaining or sad, there's no point. It doesn't solve anything.
Thank you. How to deal with negative people who all the time consider your being peaceful as weakness and take advantage of your peacefulness?
Don't try to convince them that because I'm peaceful, I'm actually quite strong. You don't need to convince anyone. You just be who you are, connected with Baba. But if they're not happy with you, then tell them, well, this is who I am, this is what I am, this is my life, and this is how I want to be. And so then I think they'll get the message that they don't want to, then maybe, hopefully, they won't disturb you anymore.
Another question about relationship before we move to the long question about religion. The question says, how can I create balance in a place where someone who always press my buttons, especially at work, and I cannot leave the place? So how to deal with that person?
When they press my button, can I press my button of Om Shanti? And just go inside and give them a sweet smile. They'll be shocked. They'll stop.
We have three questions, maybe two of them written by the same person, I'm not sure, because it looks like the same handwriting.
I'd like to have maybe just two more questions then. We need to have a few more minutes at the end for meditation.
Yes. Okay, so the question says, since you believe in the presence of God, the Supreme, what do you think about the messengers who are sent by God, like prophet and messengers, and the direction through the scriptures like Quran and Bible? And what do you think about the day of judgment, and how do souls come again to life after that day?
Ooh, we need an hour to really explain all of these things properly. Are these sorts of questions going to come up later in some of the topics? No? Okay. I'll explain in a simple way. Every messenger who's come has brought a very powerful message for humanity. And so it's very good that in Islam they accept the Old Testament, the New Testament, and then of course the Quran. And so every messenger has come with an important message. But according to what we see in the world today, nobody is actually following the message that has been given. And that applies to all the traditions. Whether it's we are told to follow in the footsteps of Christ, or we are told to follow in the footsteps of Buddha, or whoever it is. And so we've now come to a position where everything is theory, but we're not actually practicing the things that we've been told about. Compassion, it comes in all the traditions. Kindness, truth, justice. Make a list and you'll see that the values taught by every tradition actually are common. They're the same, they're universal. But humanity has moved very far away from that. And so this is why now, at this moment, we need to focus on the One, the Supreme, more than the messenger, and just simply take the power to do what is necessary at this moment. And yes, I believe that there does come a final point within this drama where we have to be accountable for our sins. The good I've done, I've accumulated, I'm going to get the reward of that. But also there's other things that I've done that are not so good. And either I settle them now through the power of yoga, the power of God's love, or I have to settle them in front of God with that deep realization of what it is I did do. So that's a summary of these questions. It's not answering in detail everything, but I think as you continue with your study of spiritual teachings, many of those other things will become clearer. But these two things are important, that let me focus on the Supreme and let me then follow the teachings that I've been given, because we're not doing that. And the second, let me settle my karmic account of whatever is not right through the power of God's love. Then I don't have to think about the last day of judgment. I'm settling things now through yoga power, which means through such yoga that it's like the fire that burns away the alloy, all the impurities, and the soul returns to its pure state again. Make sense? Okay.
Very sensible. Thank you very much, sister.
What I'm going to do is to share a few thoughts as we meditate and invite you to follow those ideas very simply, just for the next few minutes. Going inwards, I hold the awareness of my eternal form. I am a being of light. I, the soul, am separate to this body. I am the living being. Aware of my eternal identity, I connect with the Supreme, the Being of Light. In this awareness, I become aware of the presence of the Supreme, the Source of Light and Love. I, the soul, connect with the Supreme, my parent, the Source. This light and love surround me, and I absorb these qualities. Holding this light and love within myself, I come back to the awareness of the physical dimension. And here, in the physical domain, I remind myself I am using this physical chariot that I am a child of the Supreme. Om Shanti.